Welcome in to the final episode of Flight Plan. I'm Tim McMaster, along with Zach Rosenblatt, who covers the Jets for The Athletic. April Fools. April Fools, Zach. Sorry,
You said you were going to do one. I wasn't sure where you were going to go with it.
Did I make you nervous for a moment?
Scared you were canceling this on me.
Yeah. No, we are in it. We are in it for the long haul.
You're living in London now, so you can't do it, right?
It felt like I was living in London. We're going to get to that in a second, our recent travels. But Zach is not in his normal place, as you can see, although he is at, it's a familiar background if you're familiar with the Marriott properties. He is down at the owner's meetings in Florida covering the team. That means he's heard from Darren Mugi, Aaron Glenn, and Woody Johnson yesterday, amazingly. So we're going to talk about all of that, basically 10 takeaways from the owners' meetings down in Florida. But before we get started, Zach, since we last did the show, I think it's been like 3 weeks, for good reason. You had your bachelor party, which clearly you survived because you're here. So congratulations. Onward to the big wedding day. And I almost got stranded in Europe, or I was stranded in Europe, but I went for work. We have a good base of people in the UK covering soccer, obviously. So I went over there to do some meetings with the audio team. I was supposed to fly out the morning that Heathrow was shut down because of the fire and the electrical issues. And I ended up having to stay four more days in London. That was Friday morning. The first flight they could actually get me on was Tuesday. So a weekend in London. I'm not complaining. I'm not, but it is a long time to be away.
How'd you spend the extra days? Did you go exploring a little bit?
I did. And I studied in London, in college for a semester. So it was cool being back. I hadn't been back in a long time. And so I spent the time going back to see some like things that I remembered from then. And then obviously the city is completely different than it was then, especially like all the skyscrapers that didn't exist when I was in college. But I think I looked at my phone after I had been there 7 days. So you can do like the look back on the like step tracker, right, on your iPhone. And it said I had averaged walking 8 miles a day for 7 days.
Yeah, when we were in London for the Jets game, I think my fiance and I had like multiple days in a row of like 20,000 plus steps. So
over the weekend I did 49,000 steps.
Wow, that's good.
It was a blast. And like I said, seeing a lot of things that I remembered, but then some new stuff too. So it was cool. That's a city that you could spend long time in and like never get to everything. It's like New York, right? Like, or Paris or Los Angeles. There's so many things to do. So anyway, should we talk about the Jets? Or do you want to talk about the bachelor party? I figured you wouldn't want to talk about your bachelor
party. it was a pretty low-key bachelor party. I would say I had my first alcohol since then, like 2 days ago. And I remember that having alcohol is not fun, actually, because the morning after still sucks. So as the people in the Discord, I alerted them. I'm struggling right now. They had the media dinner, which, if you guys remember, a year ago, famously, was where Robert Saleh and Woody Johnson allegedly got into an argument. That was like a whole thing last year.
Right.
I didn't see that happen this time. It was actually raining, so it was pushed inside. I'm not going to complain. It's always a fun, great event, free food, open bar. I'll leave it at that, but I'll share one thing. So there are some famous people that'll come through here. Guy Fieri was here and Connor was fangirling over him as much as I've seen anybody fangirl over anybody. He was like obsessed with Guy Fieri. He's like famous and cool. I wasn't obsessed with that. I was talking to a Giants reporter, Pat Leonard, at the media party last night. And in mid-conversation, I just like go silent and just, you can just see me like looking like that, because Serena Williams walks right by me. Like Serena Williams is right next to me. And I don't really get starstruck anymore just because we're around all these NFL people all the time. It's kind of like, it is surreal, but I would say seeing Serena Williams walk right by me was pretty trippy. Like seeing somebody that famous just like standing right next to you
it's different, right? Like you see NFL players. But like she's literally like the greatest tennis player to ever
live. LeBron,
right?
She's like LeBron of tennis. Yeah. Or MJ, I should say. I don't want to get people yelling at me, but anyway, so we can talk about the actual stuff that matters at owners meetings, but I wanted to share my starstruck experience.
Nice. All right, let's get into it. We're breaking this down into basically 10 takeaways. Number one, though, is kind of with a bullet because it kind of grabbed a lot of headlines. Justin Fields is officially QB1. Zach, there are a lot of teams, a lot of staffs in the NFL that in the situation the Jets are in right now with bringing in a Justin Fields, who you can easily say is still unproven as an NFL quarterback, having a Tyrod Taylor, still not even being at the draft yet, when who knows, you could end up getting a quarterback time in the draft, would just say like, it's going to be a competition. We'll see what happens in the summer. But I appreciate the Jets cutting through all the BS and just letting us know what we all know when you pay a guy $20 million a year for 2 years, that he is going to be the starting quarterback.
Yeah, I was surprised by that. Darren Mooji was the one who first said it on Sunday because he was the first one to meet with us. A lot of times with a new coach, especially with kind of the vibe and tone of Aaron Glenn, it's like everybody's competing for their jobs. We're not going to say anybody's a starter. It's this. I mean, the reality is everybody knows they're starting Justin Fields. Like, that was not a surprise. It was more a surprise that they said it. But, you know, as I think about it, like I feel like the reason they're doing this, they're really trying to put Justin Fields in the best position to succeed. I think they're trying to build him up, build up his confidence. I thought the most interesting things that Aaron Glenn said yesterday morning, which I wrote about a little bit and I tweeted about it. I'm going to delve a little further about Aaron Glenn for a story either today or tomorrow. But I found it fascinating that he kept saying like he kept saying it in so many words, like he hasn't had a chance to play quarterback. I think he was basically like intimating that these teams were just focusing on his ability to run the ball and really trying to build around his running ability, which you should, because that's what he's good at. But Aaron Glenn, he kept referring to like, we watched a lot of his Ohio State film, and we thought he processed things really well at Ohio State and this and that. And the implication being like, I don't think Aaron Glenn feels like, or at least this is how he's projecting it to Justin Fields, I don't feel like the past offensive coordinators, the past head coaches have put him in position to succeed necessarily. And we feel like we have a plan to do that. And he keeps emphasizing, we want him to play quarterback. He's not just a runner. So they're fully committed to like really, I mean, obviously he's their quarterback. They're committed to it, but they believe in their ability to unlock whatever potential is in his body. And they think that they have the right people in place with Tanner Engstrand and Aaron Glenn and Charles London, the quarterback's coach. They believe this is the right group to pull out the talent. Like Darren Mooji was even asked, like, there's a lot of talk about like the Sam Darnolds and the Baker Mayfields of the world. He said, yeah, we believe that he can be that. Like they're just saying that, as opposed to like, you know, we don't want to put any pressure on him or blah, blah, blah. Like they are putting it out there how much they believe in him. I found it interesting that Aaron Glenn said they've been talking every single day, which, you know, clearly like Aaron Glenn is trying to cultivate just the right environment for him. And it's going to be interesting. You know, we haven't had a chance to talk to him yet. They didn't make any of their free agent signings available. I get the impression he's very excited. I think Garrett Wilson's excited. They still have a lot of moves to make around him. I don't think it's the best supporting cast they could have for him in terms of like the pass catchers. I think it's a solid offensive line, good running backs, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, I did find that interesting that Aaron Glenn kept emphasizing, like, you know, we want to let him play quarterback. We want to let him play quarterback. He's never really had a chance to really play quarterback. So that's been the focus, and it's going to be interesting to see what kind of offense they build around him. I think it's going to be a run heavy offense. We'll get into that with one of the points. I think it's going to be pretty run heavy, even based on what he said. He tried like pushing back on that, but I think ultimately it's pretty clear that's what it's going to look like. And I think that's the right move. This should have been a run heavy team last year, and they weren't. Yep. They passed the second most in the NFL. But yeah, so I the comments are very clear that they believe in him. And, you know, as we talked about when they signed him, you know, I didn't even view it as like a risky signing necessarily. I view it more as them like trying to buy a lottery ticket. And if it doesn't work, then you only have them under contract one more year. So they believe in them, and they believe in Tanner Engstrand's ability to build an offense around him.
All right. Takeaway number two, it's been a quiet off season, and Aaron Glenn made it clear when he spoke this week that was purposeful for this team.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause he even said, you don't win in the offseason, which I think is a quote that resonated with the fan base. You know, we've talked about that a lot on here. I've written about it a lot. Garrett Wilson had a great quote about it last year, like offseason champions and all that stuff. Like their moves, and this was, you know, I've talked to a lot of people both in and around the team. Like they didn't go into the offseason intending to shop at the top of the market. They don't believe that's how you build a team out. I think they know they're not a player away, a player or two away. And so they weren't going to go on a spending spree. They really shopped in the middle to the bottom of the market with guys that a lot of fans hadn't heard of realistically before free agency. But that was all tied into, you know, keeping things quiet. But I think more than anything, like, this is their off season, and I've talked about this. It's just so clear, Matt. They're just like all in on Aaron Glenn. Like, this is Aaron Glenn's team. This Aaron Glenn is the star of the show. It's all on him. And I think it's a smart and interesting way to go about it, because now he's going to take on all the criticism, which you want from the coach if it doesn't work, because this is, you know, they didn't shop at the high end of the market. So if you sign like a very expensive free agent and he doesn't work out, a lot of times that guy gets blamed. But Aaron Glenn believes in his ability to get the most out of all of these guys. Like, that's the idea. They're going to develop all these young players that either have been cast aside or coming off bad years or have some potential or whatever it is. They believe in their ability to unlock all these guys. Like, Brandon Stevens is one in particular, I think, that got a lot of criticism from the fan base because they gave a lot of money to a guy coming off a really bad year. But Aaron Glenn sees a guy that, you know, yes, he didn't have any interceptions. He gave up a lot of yards, but he was tight in coverage on, he was like really highly ranked in terms of like being tight in coverage. He just like didn't get his head around or force a turnover, or they still were able to complete a pass. So, and they feel like he has the tools they're looking for. And he thinks that his coaching staff is going to be able to get the good, like highlight the good stuff and make him better. And Sauce Gardner, he's talking about how he thinks he can be the best cornerback in the NFL. And so this whole offseason has just been an investment in Aaron Glenn. And that kind of goes with the quiet part, which kind of got sidetracked there a little bit, but I will say it has been a quiet offseason, which I have appreciated. But, and I'm guessing we'll probably get into this now, the noise yesterday came after the Aaron Glenn press conference, when Woody's response to the NFLPA report card became a little noisy and became all anybody was talking about.
Yeah, that's number three. He called it bogus, the report cards. The Jets, of course, came in 29th out of 32 teams, but I think Woody as owner was last as far as that part of it. He was pushed on what he thinks is bogus about it, and he brought up points about how the league is supposed to have more involvement in it, and he thought the way the questions were asked wasn't fair, and he didn't think they got to enough players, and that, like, the, I don't know how he phrased it, but like, this isn't what the real players think, and that all that sort of stuff. But the fact is, you were ranked along with all the other teams, and your team finished 29th out of 32. No matter how the rankings are done, you did poorly in them. You know what I mean? Like, yes. Whoever finished in the top five, probably not complaining so much about it being a bogus report.
Yeah, yeah. I was surprised he went that hard against it. I don't think it came across very well.
He did have one good line, which was just like, no matter what we do, we want to be the best at it. Yeah. So we'll work on it, which is what he should have just said.
That's right. What I was about to say. Like, he, again, it's a messaging thing. We talk about that a lot with the Jets. Their messaging is often wrong. Like, in his long quote, which I tweeted the whole thing, he talked about, like, we want to listen to the players, like, when they want, if they want better food or if they want better facilities. Like, there's certain things, I want a better line of communication between me and them. Like, that's all positive. But, like, shitting on this survey, which, again, I think there are questions about the survey and how it's conducted, and like, we don't know how many players from each team, like, specifically how many Jets players were in the survey. Like, we don't know, was it 3, was it 100? What, I mean, there's not 100 players, you get my point. So we don't know, like, I don't know exactly when it was conducted, all that stuff, but irregardless of all of that, he should have took it on the chin and been like, yeah, I need to be better. He has talked about how he needs to be better, look in the mirror, all that stuff. And I think this offseason, they've so far been, there's another topic we're going to get into, which is pretty jarring, like, news that came out yesterday. But yeah, I don't know. It wasn't the best response he could have had. And that's kind of how the Jets work. But yeah, I don't know. They're in a state of transition. They're really changing things in there. And we're going to get into this, obviously. And Aaron Glenn's a big part of that. But they're just making sweeping changes across the organization. They needed them to a degree. I don't know. Like, the way they're going about it, like, we'll see if it works out, obviously. I mean, they're making drastic changes, and it's hard to blame them because of how long they've been losing and had bad culture and all that stuff. But it starts at the top, ultimately, and if Woody doesn't get better, then the organization is not going to get better. Like, they can change, they can fire, they can buy out, whatever. They can, you know, poo-poo this report. Like, all that matters is if Woody goes about it the right way. And so far, from all everything I hear, like, the kids are not as involved anymore, from what I understand. I think Woody's taking a step. He's still, like, involved. I think he talks to Muji and Aaron Glenn a lot, but I think he let them do their thing. And as I've said from day one, and I'll keep saying it, until we see how he reacts, like, when things aren't going well, that's when we'll know. Like, this has happened before. Like, there's been times where he's taken a step back, let them do the thing. They start losing. He gets impatient. He gets involved. I want you to do this, this, and this. Is he going to be able to stay patient? History says no. And so we're going to find out if he's changed at all. And if Aaron Glenn, everybody seems to say, if anybody is going, if Aaron Glenn can't do it, then nobody will be able to. And so we're going to find out if Dan Campbell actually said that, not like about Woody, but like, if Aaron Glenn can't turn that around for them, then nobody can. And so we're about to find out how true that is.
All right. And another one that came out of yesterday with Woody, yeah, that you kind of referenced there is the change of this team and the report that the Jets offered buyouts to, and the number is staggering, 170 of 250 team employees. So basically two-thirds of the team employees offered buyouts.
I think it's every single non-football, like, not on the football side. Like, I think every single employee got offered a buyout. And I was talking to somebody in the NFL last night. They're like, I've never seen that. Like, that, this person from the NFL, it was like, I guess the league knew about it a couple of weeks ago. I guess it just didn't get out. And I was like, I don't follow, like, the corporate world. Like, is this, like, something that happens? And he's like, I've never seen that before. Like, to that level, like, that many, that higher percentage of your employees being offered the, it's not layoffs. We'll see what happens. I think yesterday was the deadline for I think it was based on your time in the organization is how much, like, severance you'll get, like, based on, like, weeks or whatever. But I think the idea was, like, you have the option to, I think the way they're presenting it is, we want to give people an opportunity. Like, if you don't want to be a part of this organization, or, like, if you don't see yourself advancing, like, okay, what's your goal? I want to be, you know, the next level up. Well, we don't have that opportunity here necessarily. So if you want to go pursue it somewhere else, it's a good idea to do that. From what I've heard in the last 24 hours since, like, this news came out, I've heard about a lot of people taking the buyouts, and I don't know if there's any fear of them getting laid off after the fact. Woody kind of, like, danced around that when he was asked, like, what if, like, not enough people take it? Like, are you guys going to be doing layoffs? And it was kind of like, we'll see how it plays out and all that stuff. But I think ultimately the goal is to change the culture. But as I said, I don't know. Again, I'm not in the building. We've reported a lot about the dysfunction in there, obviously. And I think my story with Diana and Mike Silver, we had an anecdote in there about how Woody basically hired three Bobs, like, from Office Space, like, guys who came in to audit the company. I'm pretty sure this is a product of that. I'm not 100% sure, but I think
that makes sense.
This is a product of all the conversations they've had, just figuring out where, you know, all those things. And I don't know I don't think this is, like, a cost saving measure. I could be wrong. I think it's a culture change is the idea. If there's going to be mass, not layoffs, there's going to be mass, like, departures, they're going to have to fill a lot of those roles, you would think, too. So, like, there's just going to be massive turnover. And I imagine Darren Muji, once you get through the draft, he'll probably turn over the front office a little bit, maybe not extremely, but I think there's going to be some more additions and or subtractions maybe. And yeah, this is going to be a new look New York Jets organization, and that's not a bad thing necessarily. But this was a jarring headline. And I think there are fans that look at it as, like, yeah, they need to get all the bad stuff out of there and all the good. I don't think that's even what this is. I don't think they're getting all, you know, the bad apples or whatever out of there. I think they offered it to everybody. Like, not everybody in that building is bad at their job. Like, there are certain people that maybe, you know, they needed to make changes. But as I keep saying, it starts at the top. If Woody Johnson does not get better, all of this, like, nothing's going to change. Like, it's the head of the snake. And even, like, you know, the people who surround him, like, everybody needs to do their jobs better and let the football people do the football things in the business side. But yeah, this was, it was actually funny timing, because it came out, like, shortly before that the article came out. And then the Jets told us we were talking to Woody, like, they were like scheduling, and then we got the time. So it was, like, great timing, because then we were able to ask him about it. But anyway, that was, like, those two things were, like, the noisiest in my world, at least. Those are the noisiest things out of yesterday. And we talked to Aaron Glenn for 30 minutes. So
I had a conversation once with a someone I know who was in a position in his job where he had to be the, and he hated it, had to be the guy who like had these conversations about offering buyouts, right, to a whole bunch of people. And the way he explained it to me was because there was the thought that like you said, if not enough people took the buyout, there would be layoffs. That wasn't like spoken, but there's always that fear, right? So the way he went into it is he's a stand-up guy. You know, people get stuck in these positions where they have to do this, even if they're bad.
Yeah.
You know, bad position, even though you're a good person. It's just where you are in your job. And he said he was completely upfront and basically had a different conversation with every single person where he was like, you should take the buyout.
Yeah.
And then other people he would go to and say, hey man, you can take the buyout, but like wink, wink, please stick around.
It's funny you phrase it that way. Cause I've heard like that kind of phrasing related to this, I would say over the last couple of days. So, God bless. I've never, even when I came to, I can think there was like some layoffs a little after I got to the Athletic, but I've never been somewhere where I like ever necessarily had a fear for like my job or things like that, like knock on wood. Like I've been blessed in that way. So I've never like gone through this situation where you're deciding like, okay, do I want to take this money and be okay for 6-8 months and try and find another job in that stretch, relax? Or do I want to like tough it out and figure out if they want to keep me? Like I can't even imagine what a lot of these employees are going through right now. Cause I think there are a lot of employees that have been in the organization for a long, long time. People that nobody in Jets fan base has heard of that have just been like important cogs in the machine for a long time that are taking the buyouts or debating whether they want to or wondering if they should, if they're going to lose their job if they don't, like all that kind of stuff. So it's a very interesting time, and I'm very curious to see what comes out of it and if it's going to leak out, like how many people took it out of that number, because I mean that's a big number. They'd have to like really fill out the staff all over again, and I don't even know how that process would work. So
yeah, they can't want all 170 to take. I would like think. That's just asking.
That's the thing. I think there's certain people they probably offered that like they know are not going to take it, but they're technically not football staff, so they got the offer. So like I don't think you're not going to see like the team president Jaime or like people like that. I don't think they're taking a buyout necessarily because Jaime's not technically on the football side, I believe. I'm assuming he probably got an offer, but I don't think he'll take it. So that's just me speculating, by the way. That's not like a report or anything. I just wanted to make that clear. But it's like a business podcast all of a sudden because we're just like talking about like layoffs and corporations and stuff like that. But I do know like this is a thing in the corporate world, like where people get offered buyouts and stuff like that. I just never have seen it on a mass scale like this.
Yeah. Let's be honest, it can be a great thing for a person because say you get 6 months in a buyout and then you get a new job a month later. And for five months, you're getting paid by two jobs.
Double,
it can be a really
kind of like Nathaniel Hackett when Nathaniel Hackett with the Jets and Broncos paying him.
Exactly. All right, let's get back to football.
Yeah.
AVT staying at guard. Hallelujah.
Yeah. Yeah. We can wrap more rapid fire some of these.
Let's sit through these.
I think that one was, it's one of those things like because the right tackle position was pretty wide open, it seemed like. They signed Chukwuma Okorafor, which, by the way, Aaron Glenn like addressed. We don't know what happened with the Patriots last year, but he said he felt comfortable having conversations with them, and it seems like they like him as like an option there. But I think there was a lot of like, okay, they signed Josh Myers, really experienced starting center. Are they going to slide everybody over one? And Darren Muji was pretty like definitive, like, no, he's a guard. The interesting part of that was when he said Josh Myers is going to push Joe Tippmann. I don't know if that's just supposed to motivate him or something, but Joe Tippmann will be the starting center ultimately. But yeah, AVT at right guard is the right move. He's a good right guard going into a contract year. He's young. I wonder if they get ahead of it if he starts off really well this season or something like that. But yeah, I think that's what they should do. He was healthier last year than he had been the last two before that because they didn't move him around a bunch. So keep him at right guard where he's best.
Alan Lazard still around, and it's starting to sound like that may continue to be the case. He may actually stick with not under his current contract.
Yeah, well, it's a fluid situation. Like they kept making sure to say that because I think what the implication is, he has to be willing to accept a probably significant pay cut, and if he's not, then he won't be here.
And it makes sense for them to keep him until June 1st anyway, right? Because then you
save a
ton more.
And wait till after the draft, see what you do in the draft at receiver. Ultimately, unless it doesn't seem like they're really eager to sign older players. like unless you're signing Tyler Lockett or Amari Cooper or somebody like that, like there's not really, Alan Lazard's not a good player ultimately. Like I think he's fine as a backup. I think he's serviceable. He's a good blocker. He can make some plays. He gets too many drops, blah, blah, blah. He doesn't really do anything when Aaron Rodgers is in his quarterback, also as a factor, but their receiver room is barren right now. I mean, they signed somebody else we're going to talk about a little bit because they signed him since our last pod. But I've been surprised ultimately about him still being on the roster because it felt like a foregone conclusion, but they spoke pretty glowingly of him. And maybe that's just because they're trying to trade him. Again, they're trying to like be like, hey, he's really good. Like everybody should pay attention to how good Alan Lazard is and trade us something for him. But yeah, I still would be surprised if he's on the roster ultimately. But the way they're talking about him, like I think they're open to the possibility of bringing him back. And if you can get him to pay cut and come down to the, you know, I think his cap hits like 11 or 13 million. If you can get him down to 5 million or something like that, like sure, whatever. He can be your third receiver and you draft somebody and hope that's the number two and he's better than what they have or whatever. But yeah, I don't think he's going to be a Jet ultimately, but it's a higher percent chance that he is than before.
So speaking of number two, they did sign a receiver since we last spoke. You referenced that. Josh Reynolds, 1 year, $5 million. He could be the two, but that's not the best case scenario for this Jets team, I would imagine.
Yeah, I'd say as of now, he's probably the favorite to be in the number two. He has ties to Aaron Glenn and Tanner Engstrand from Detroit. He was where he had his best seasons. He was with the Broncos last year. He was banged up. I think he got shot last year, actually. Which is a hard thing to come back from. I've never been shot, but I imagine that was tough. But Aaron Glenn raved about his blocking. Like that was the first thing he brought up, which is like just more emphasis to me that this is going to be a run heavy team. Like if that's like the thing that you're highlighting. Again, he was like in this free agent class outside of Justin Fields, he was like maybe the biggest name, which is kind of funny. Like Josh Reynolds was the biggest name they signed in free agency, but he can be a solid third wide receiver. I don't think it would be great if he's your number two. He's been productive. He can make some plays. He can be reliable. I think he's probably better than Alan Lazard ultimately if he's completely healthy. But yeah, you know, receiver is one of, if not the biggest needs still on this roster. And I think they're going to draft a receiver pretty high.
Sticking with receivers, they do have one really good one, Garrett Wilson, and a great corner in Sauce Gardner. That came up, Darren Mougi talking about it on Sunday. They're saying all the right things about keeping these guys. Aaron Glenn said a lot yesterday also about, hey, we want to keep our own. We want to keep our own, which has not been a Jets thing. So it's nice to hear it. Obviously, there's some time to work this out, but at least they're saying the right things.
Yeah, I think ultimately they're going to sign them this offseason is kind of my feeling.
Both of them this offseason?
I think both. I think they'll get ahead of it. I think they're valued all the way up to the top of the organization. So, but Darren Mougi has been insisting, like, we're not doing any of that till after the draft. Like, they're waiting. Like, they're putting their foot down. Ultimately, you're going to pay him a lot. I know it's going to be like, oh, why aren't you paying him now? They're going to have to pay. So, it's always like you get more than the last guy. I think Sauce Gardner would be happy with 1 cent more than the guy that's at the top, which I believe is Derek Stingley now. Technically, I think his contract was structured interestingly. But I think they'll probably make in the range of 25 to 30 per year, maybe. Maybe Sauce on lower than Garrett in the final number because the receiver contracts have gone way up. But, you know, as they were saying, like, number one, most teams don't really get that caliber of player in the building, especially not the Jets. So it's not complicated. Sign them. And then a year from now, like, those contracts are not going to look that bad because the next guys are going to get money and then the next guy and then the next guy. That's how it goes. Like,
and the
salary cap will continue blowing up. I mean, look at the quarterback contract. It's funny if you just look back, like, 5 years ago, whatever year it was where Kirk Cousins first got like his first big contract and he made like $30 million. And that was like a huge deal. And now that's like Justin Fields is making 20 and he was a backup last year, basically. So like the numbers are just going to keep going up. Sign an all pro corner, sign a Pro Bowl caliber wide receiver and ask questions later. And there's other guys on the roster. I think they probably will either consider extending or, you know, whether it's Quincy or an AVT. I'm not saying I think they will necessarily. Like, there's guys that are coming up on contracts, and it's going to be interesting to see how they handle it.
All right. Number nine takeaway, running back room and a 1-2-3 punch. Aaron Glenn in Detroit, that was a team that had a clear, like, 1-2 punch in the backfield. But Aaron Glenn is talking about this backfield, and he's not, like, putting Breece Hall on a pedestal. He's talking about all three guys.
I did find it interesting. The question was initially about Breece Hall, and he kind of made it about the three guys, which tells me that I think Breece Hall has something to prove to this new staff. Like, Breece is coming off not a great year. I think Breece has admitted that. I think he has admitted, like, his confidence was a little down by the end of the year. The run blocking wasn't great, but, you know, I don't think he ran the ball as well as he has in the past. And you have two young guys who are strong, powerful runners, which is the kind of runners that I think Aaron Glenn wants. It's like the Dave Montgomery types from Detroit. And I think he really likes those guys. I don't know if he likes Braylon or Isaiah Davis more, but he likes them enough that he kept having, like, Connor Hughes asked a question about, like, you know, you had a 1-2 punch with Dave Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs. Like, is that what you want in this team? He's like, what about a 1-2-3 punch? Like, if we can get them all on the field at the same time, we will. I mean, that would be crazy if you put, unless you're running like the full, like, wishbone offense or whatever, where it just runs
every those play. Three guys plus Justin Fields. Yeah, just run the wishbone.
Yeah. I mean, like, but maybe. So I wouldn't expect Breece to be the bell cow that maybe, like, the expectation was going into last year. I'm very high on Braylon Allen. I think Isaiah Davis impressed me a lot more than I expected last year. So I just think Breece has a lot to prove. He's in a contract year also. It's going to be very interesting to see how things go with that group. But I it's going to be a legit running back by committee situation is my feeling. And this should be, and we've talked about this, if this is not a top 10 rushing offense, that would be a major, major disappointment, because they have, I think, one of the more interesting running back rooms in the NFL. And you have one of, if not the best running quarterbacks in the NFL. Like, I don't think he's a better player than, like, Lamar Jackson, obviously, but Justin Fields is a great running quarterback. Like, he's so fast and athletic, and that's what he's good at. So if they are not one of the best running teams in the NFL, and they don't just, like, drain clock, like, my vision of this team is they're just draining clock as much as you can. You're setting up Garrett Wilson for some big plays, but you're running the ball as much as you can. Run it down your throat over and over. Don't get away from the run like the Jets did constantly last year. And I think that's what's going to happen.
All right. And the reason that happened last year is, I mean, I think we can be honest. It was because of the quarterback who's really making the plays and switching out of plays and doing all those things. We are now in a post Aaron Rodgers world. The Aaron Rodgers drama continues, man. He's now holding the Steelers hostage, it seems like. Hasn't made a decision what he's doing there. But what vibes do you get from this Jets team after talking to Muji and Glenn about the fact that they don't have to talk about Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, I mean, I think the noise thing, even if they don't want to say it, I'm sure it's tied to Aaron Rodgers also. Like, they got rid of the noisiest person in the building. I've joked with our Steelers writer, Mike DeFabo. Actually, Matt Schneidman, the Packers writer, our Packers writer at The Athletic, we had, like, a hilarious, Schneidman had a funny embrace. I was talking to Diana, and Matt comes and puts his arm over me. He's like, we're in the no longer have to deal with the drama club. And he starts, like, jumping and, like, celebrating. and it's just funny because that dynamic between me and Mike DeFabo, who covers the Steelers, is what it was like for me and Schneidman 2 years ago, where I'm like, so what's it like to cover them? Like, this and this, like, I'm waiting. We're like, you know, communicating things we know. And now I'm not the mentor, but like the seasoned veteran of Aaron Rodgers to Mike DeFabo, who is now, like, waiting on him. And I think Aaron Rodgers is not in any rush. I know he worked out with DK Metcalf. Like, it's just all the usual Aaron Rodgers BS that happens. I think he's still maybe waiting on the Vikings personally, but I don't know. It just feels so good to be on the other side of it. I can't lie. Like, Aaron Rodgers was great for business, great for the pod, great for The Athletic, but, like, it's kind of nice to have some quiet, some peace and quiet, especially in my wedding year. Like, I think there's a little extra for me because I'm planning a wedding. I'm planning my honeymoon right now. Not having to, like, wait on tooth and nail for, like, the announcement to come, which is what happened a couple years ago, if you remember, because we were trying to wait for the trade to happen, and it took 2 months. And I had, like, a trip planned with Samantha, and I waited until last possible minute to be like, there's a chance I might have to leave early if they make this trade and they have the press conference. And then they didn't. And then it finally happened right before the draft. So for Mike's health, I hope it happens sooner than later. But also, it's fun being on the other side of it.
Yeah. All right. Before we say goodbye, those are our 10 takeaways from the owners' meeting. Safe travel back, Zach, by the way. But thank you. Michael Dunn did throw this in. Is that Tim Robinson on your microphone?
It is. It's the hot dog sketch where he said, we're trying to find the one who did this. It's become like a major meme. Tim Robinson is my hero. I love him so much. and I think You Should Leave is the best show of all time. Thank you.
There's a reason to watch us on YouTube. If you haven't and you just listen to the pod, is the Tim Robinson microphone here. All right, that's going to do it. The draft is quickly approaching. We do need to get some draft experts on here.
Yeah.
We will do that in the coming weeks. because we've been teasing it for like 6 months.
I know.
And it's time to finally do it. So we'll talk draft specifically and who, as we get closer and things like become more clear, who are the most likely players that the Jets could take, pros and cons of that, all that stuff. Thank you for tuning in to the Flight Plan Podcast.